The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Yeah, so in the last couple of months, I've been reflecting about this the role of Sangha in one's Dharma life. And in particular, I've been reflecting about my own journey and my own Dharma path. And I come to really deeply appreciate Sangha. It's one of the significant, one of the three refuges in our Buddha's teachings, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And so for me, as I was reflecting about the role of Sangha, and I kind of realized that the Sangha for me was really the way in. It really was what brought me to the Dharma path. And so I came to United States in the middle of my college years, and I got here not knowing anybody except for my dad was around, but he was busy. And so I was in college in Minnesota, and it was cold. And it was a period of my life that I felt socially and culturally confused. Not speaking the same language, not having friends, and half of my family was still back in China. And so I was somehow blessed that I stumbled upon this Pure Land Sangha in Minnesota, Minneapolis. And it was a group of Chinese American folks, mostly. Lots of them were originally from Taiwan. And so I was able to speak the same language there. And but more so, I don't quite remember a lot of particular things in that Sangha or even people. In my memory, I had this felt sense of a warmth associated with the Sangha. Much of what we did was we got together and we chanted. And the Pure Land Sangha, there was a lot of chanting. And a lot of them is chanting Buddha's names. And remember that sense of a calm and ease being in that group. And the group also together did some of the social services that I felt was kind, generous, and ethical. It kind of showed me a different way of being or living together that I was not kind of, I forgot in the pursuit of many things, right? And so this really brought a beautiful aspect of a life quite vividly. You know, at the time when I was very confused. And so it was kind of a bit of a light came inside of me when I kind of stumbled upon this Pure Land Sangha. And it was such a blessing because of this memory and the association I had with this particular group and how they were. And what they embodied, and I began to search for Buddhist groups everywhere I went. You know, I went to college, and I looked for a sangha in the college in graduate school, and then I came to Bay Area. I continued on that journey, and then gradually. And that was really, for me, was a deep sense of, because of this, I kind of got on the Dharma path. And so I have a deep appreciation and gratitude in this particular aspects of my Dharma life. And so nowadays, sometimes we refer Sangha to as Buddhist community. And you will have IMC community here, and you know, we have other communities, centers around in the Bay Area and in the world. But I sometimes kind of think that when we only loosely associate Sangha as a Buddhist community, it can lose the significance of it. And so today I wanted to kind of explore some aspects of Sangha that is quite significant in our Dharma path. In my mind, sometimes when we consider it as a community, we can easily relate it to as any other form of communities, like, you know, a neighborhood community, a school community, or not that they are, you know, they're not good, but there are certain significance that can kind of get buried. And I can say that Sangha is certainly not some sort of get-together or feeling good, clubbing, you know, partying, or even the assembly. The role of a Sangha, to me, is some form of a homecoming. It's coming home to truth, collectively. And so when we take refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha, in one of the suttas in Anguttara Nikaya, it said, "The Sangha of the Blessed One's disciples is practicing the good way, practicing the straight way, practicing the true way, practicing the proper way." And those are the qualities of the Sangha. They're practicing in these four ways. And so kind of what I noticed was in this way of describing the Sangha, it didn't really say who are in it, how they look like, what they possess, you know. But rather, it's describing how they are together as a community. And they are practicing in these four ways. The good way, the straight way, the true way, and the proper way. And then, so those are the, you know, four qualities that's being described in the sutta. And later on, that the Buddha also said, you know, this is the Sangha, Sangha of the Blessed One's disciple, that is worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offerings, worthy of reverential salutation, the unsurpassed field of merit for the world. Wow. I read that line. It's, you know, this is what this is creating. It's creating an unsurpassed field of merit for the world. Being together, practicing this way, it's creating some profound field that is affecting the world. Yeah. And so there is that significance of Sangha that's being that's worth taking refuge in, right? Yeah. And so so today I figured, you know, we unpack this four ways a little bit together. And it is said that the practicing the good way, the straight way, the true way, and the proper way. And so when I reflected this, I was thinking, you know, there are many ways that we live our lives as well. You know, we could be in the Bay Area, could be living a very busy way, you know, filled with activities, events, and lots to do on the Halloween. It's on my mind because my son, this is one of his favorite holidays, you know, and you can see lots of activities around it that is happening. And we can also live in a way that is constantly seeking for comfort. You know, now we could get a massage and do a spa or getting some really nice food and living in a big house. And so we could be living in a way that is, why don't you come and join us? Yeah. Because we're talking about Sangha, so I figured we come together as a circle. So we were just talking about the four qualities that in the sutta that describes the Sangha, and practicing the good way, the straight way, the true way, and the proper way. And so we could live in all those different ways that, you know, with the sense of wanting comfort or being busy or even being purposeful. You know, we can have a lot of purpose. There are many this kind of ways that we live. Before I met the Pure Land Sangha, and I was living in a way that pretty much my parent told me, or my culture or my society kind of told me, this is how you're supposed to live, you know. Study well, get to a good college, and get a good job, and make a lot of money, and you know, maybe getting married and all of that, and they're having children. I didn't really think about it. I just kind of followed the way that they told me and kept on walking. And not until I met this Sangha, it kind of opened my eyes up. Oh, you know, there is a different way of living that is almost like orthogonal to what I was told all along. And it really felt right in my heart. And so that was the light. I kind of followed along little by little. And so one way to understand that the practicing the good way together as a Sangha is that it's a way that leads to some true sense of goodness and well-being inside of us, rather than stress and suffering. And this kind of a true sense of well-being isn't connected necessarily with acquiring, getting something, gaining something, successes, but rather kind of our heart might open up, can feel some sense of ease in our body and in our mind. And that's kind of source really nourish us from inside out. And then practicing the true way. The true way in my mind is pointing at living in a way that is not in a way that is imagined the future, projected the future, or the memory of the past, but is something that is true, that is happening right now, right here. And unmistakably, that is happening right now and right here. And nothing else is really true to us but this one right now, right here. And so living true way, in the true way, really brings the sense of a presence in our overall being. And it's being really raw and intimate with this breath, with this gathering, and being really connected and with that moment of a life that is happening right now, right here. And so it's that kind of intimacy that we all feel when we're really present with our life. And that is kind of the sense of earthiness, yeah? And also, when it's only when we become really true, we can meet our life in the way that it is. And in that meeting, we also allow certain forms of life energy that was kind of shuffled in the background to bubble up. You know, a lot of warmth and love can bubble up. Compassion can bubble up, right? When we're preoccupied with our own ideas of a future in the past and ideas of who we are, a lot of this capacity of love, commitment, and truth are not seen, are not met in us. And so this practicing in the true way give me a very kind of a visceral sense of being wide open, kind of receiving all that is happening in our life without kind of pushing it around and shuffling it and trying to fix it and changing it in the way that we want it. Yeah. And so that's a... And that's the second aspect that was describing the quality of the Sangha. And then the third one is the Sangha practicing the straight way. I don't know what straight way exactly is, but I figured this doesn't necessarily mean it's the shortest way from A to B or the fast path, but rather... To me, it's pointing at the way of living that is not a giving in to take a detours of sensual pleasure or to take kind of like an easy way sometimes for us. You know, it's not that easy to practice because lots of things bubble up in our experiences that really kind of using a strong word, demand us to really meet it. When we don't meet it, we take the easy way, but it's really not a straight way. We're oftentimes simply spinning in circles by not really meeting it. And the other aspect of the straight way has to do with in my mind, that of ethics, living in a way that is ethical. And then I remember, you know, when I was maybe elementary school, that once I opened my history book in the middle of the test, trying to find answer. And I still remember the feeling afterwards. For days, I would not feel comfortable. And that form of a lying is uncomfortable. It's stress and dukkha. And even now I can remember that. I don't remember what I got, even if I looked at the answers. But I remember that sense of a burden, you know, unease that can happen when we commit or when we behave in a way that is unethical. That doesn't suit the heart. You know, we all know what it feels like when there is this little voice in the back of our mind that says, this is not right. but we still did it. And when that little voice goes away, it feels right in the body, right? Because when we are really ethical and kind, gentle to the life experiences that happen within us and outside of us, we feel that lightness. It's kind of like the big burden gets put down. And so in a way, that the straight way is also that of a form of ethical way. It's an ethical way of a living. It's a kind way. And so the sutta sometimes you use the term as a, it's a way that is blameless by the wise, you know, and you have no regret also, yeah? And so that's the third aspect of living together as a Sangha, practicing the straight way. And the last one is this translation called Proper Way. This is the Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation. Practicing the proper way. And to me, this means that we practice in a way that is conducive to true well-being and conducive to liberation. And rather than something that is evoking for a constant sense of seeking for temporary relief. Yeah. And so the proper way, you know, one way to understand it, it could be to practice in the way that is a balanced, you know, not too striving, but not too laxing, and not too rigid, but at the same time still relaxed. And the other way to understand this is could also be that of the way that is described by the Noble Eightfold Path, and living in a way that is according to the Noble Eightfold Path, which really covers the totality of living this life, you know, in daily life and in meditation. And this is, I think all of you know this, you know, it's the right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. And so that's, you know, one way to understand it. But there can be many ways, you know, depending on where we are in our practice and what the situations are. And so it's worthwhile for us to also kind of just, in general, pay attention to how we practice and find our way that kind of really seems proper for this situation right now. And the other aspect of the Sangha that evoked in me by practicing in these ways is that sense of good friendship and good companionship. And some of you know this. This is in one of the suttas in the old text as well, that the Buddha's cousin, Ananda, said to Buddha, "Oh, half of the holy life," and some translation would say half of the spiritual life, "is good friendship, good companionship, and good comradeship." But the Buddha said, "No, no, Ananda, the entire of, or the whole of the holy life is good friendship, good companionship, and good comradeship." And so the Buddha is correcting Ananda. No, it's the whole of your spiritual life. The whole of the spiritual life is this, is good friendship. And so later on, he also explained why he said that. And he said that because the person who has good friendship and good companionship, they will, without being pushed in any way, you know, so they will cultivate and develop the Noble Eightfold Path. So there's no doubt, you know, if you have a good friendship and good companionship, you will cultivate and develop the Noble Eightfold Path. And so that's the half of it. And then the other half is that And for those who cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, when they develop this, and the person who practices this way, they will also help others who are not yet free of stress and dukkha to practice this way as well. And so that is the other half. And so they practice for themselves and also for others. And so the whole of the holy life is based on good friendship. And so that's how the Buddha explained why the whole of the holy life is good friendship, good companionship. And it's just kind of reflecting upon my own experience in different sanghas, and that is certainly the case. You know, when I'm being with a circle of friends who dedicate themselves to ethical behaviors and inner exploration, cultivating beautiful qualities of being human, it really kind of inspired me and give me trust and commitment to this path as well. And at the same time, inspired me to share this with others when appropriate. Yeah? So that's really connected with my own experience as well. And so maybe I'll end with a little story, and that is in yet another sutta, and that describes how three monastics were living together, maybe as a form of inspiration for all of us as well. And this is from the Middle Length Discourses. It's describing three monastics who's been living together. And this is the Venerable Anuruddha, Venerable Nandiya, and the Venerable Kimbala. And they've been living together. And the Buddha went to see them, just to check them out. You know, Buddha as a teacher likes to sometimes go to his disciples to check on them. And so the Buddha went to see them and said to them, "Well, I hope you're all keeping well. I hope you're all comfortable. I hope you're not having any trouble getting alms food." And so they replied, "Oh, we're keeping well. We're comfortable. And we're not having any trouble getting alms food." And the Buddha said, "I hope that you are all living in concord with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, viewing each other with kindly eyes." And they replied, "Sure, Venerable Sir, we are living in concord, with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, viewing each other with kindly eyes." And the Buddha wasn't satisfied just yet, so he wants to know more. So he said, "How do you live like this?" So they said, "Venerable Sir, as to that, I think thus. It is a gain for me, it is a great gain for me that I'm living with such companions in the holy life. I maintain bodily acts of loving kindness towards those venerable ones, both openly and privately. I maintain verbal acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately. I maintain mental acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately. I consider, why should I not set aside what I wish to do and do what those venerable ones wish to do? Then I set aside what I wish to do and do what those venerable ones wish to do. We are different in body, but one in mind." And those two other monks also said the same thing. So wouldn't that be great? That's how they practice together and they live together. You know, when they are, however they are, in body, in mind, in speech, they maintain loving kindness, both openly and privately. You know, whether or not you see it, I have this loving kindness, spreading, supporting everyone. And that I would put what I wanted to do off to the side and do what the other people wish to do together. And I love this notion of blending like milk and water. And we're different in body and one in mind. So maybe that's a high hope for a community. Yeah. And the later on in the sutta also, the Buddha talked about the other half of the holy life. And the Buddha said that how they, the people of all kinds in the villages and cities, states, countries from which those three people come from, they should all remember them with a confident heart. And doing so would lead to the welfare and the happiness of all of them for a long time. And so just how they behave, you know, would have an impact around them in their towns and their states and countries. And then they will, you know, bring much of a benefit all around for a long time. So I think that's all I have prepared to say about the Sangha. Maybe we'll open up to have any questions. I'm going to stop recording.